You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Are you tired of the I can't mindset? The I'm not good enough mindset? Do you feel like your negative thoughts control your life? Well, you came to the right place. Because in the next 30 minutes, you will learn how to break free from the limiting mindset of anxiety, fear, victimization, depression, trauma, and self-hatred by reprogramming your subconscious mind. It's time to master your mind with Dr. Erica.
Hello, hello, good people, and welcome to Master Your Mind with Dr. Erica. Thank you for listening in today. Today is a good day. I want to just take a deep breath and release. And I want to take another deep breath and release. Just blow out any of the stress, any of the worry, anything that you're dealing with that seems to really permeate your thought life. Just go and release it. I often want people to know that you are a co-creator in your life journey. And as a psychologist, my goal is really to support you on your journey so that I can help give you new insights, new understanding, new ways of thinking and feeling and awareness that you have choices. And so I'm always looking for guests that shed light on that. And my guest today is back for part two, Leonard Perlmutter. And I simply have enjoyed the meditations that he hosts on Sunday mornings through the American Meditation Institute. And I just really encourage you, if you don't know about meditation, if you want to learn more about it, you really have to check out these free Sunday morning sessions because I have really enjoyed them. And so, you know, one of the things that I have implemented in my daily practice is meditation. And it's such a difference when you allow yourself time to be peaceful within and not be distracted by everything going on around you. And so I just really encourage you to look more into it, practice it, and be open-minded to it, because I think there are a lot of negative and limiting beliefs about, you know, what it is and what it can do for you. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that, but I want you to know that I am running a coaching special from now until the end of the year, because we are wrapping up 2021. I don't know why, but I'm excited. I am so excited for the good things to come in 2022. I'm excited because I'm still alive in 2021, but I am offering a coaching special, buy one, get two. And I really encourage you to, you know, take a look at my website, healthyminds.expert. I have a lot of information and resources there for you, because really my goal is to teach you that you are worthy and you are deserving to receive good things in your life. And transformation is a beautiful thing. I always say, mental health is human health, because if you're human and you're going through this human experience, you're going to need some support on your journey. And so with that, I want to introduce, I'm welcoming back, like I said, for part two, Leonard Perlmutter. And, you know, this book, you know, Your Conscience, the key to unlock limitless wisdom and creativity and solve all of your life's challenges, is really a good insight into how our mind works. And so if you're struggling or you're unhappy in any aspect of your life, chances are you made a choice that wasn't tuned in to your conscience. And we've all done it. And now this brilliant new book by Leonard Perlmutter is going to show you and give you insight into your conscience and how you, in your conscience, you can sway in your life and help you make these decisions that support and guide you and act in your highest good, which leads to a life of joy, love, peace, both personal and professional success. Leonard is one of Western world's pioneers in the introduction of meditation into the cultural firmament. Having founded the American Meditation Institute in Avril Park, New York in 1996, AMI's courses are now approved and accredited by the American Medical Association and the American Nurses Association. Leonard serves as the author and editor of Transformation, the Journal of Meditation as Mind-Body Medicine. He has many accolades, does many teachings, and I just want you to be aware that he has informational workshops that benefit meditation and yoga science. And he offers these programs online through his website, The American Meditation, www.americanmeditation.org. And so I just want to welcome you back for part two. And I just want to read something that here it says, at this moment in our nation's history, given the pain caused by a global pandemic, a reckoning on race, in a more divisive political climate than ever before, our conscience can help us turn the ship around one heart and mind at a time. I love that. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here again, blessing me with your presence and just allowing and sharing of your knowledge that that I appreciate.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm very grateful for the invitation, and it's so nice to be back with you. Thank you.
So the last time in part one, we talked a little bit about the four parts of the mind, and you gave brief descriptions. And I really want, you know, I'm hoping that we can go a little bit deeper into the part of our mind that is the conscience, which is, of course, the guider, but also talk a little bit about the unconscious, because I think we all operate from these unconscious paradigms, if you will, memories and habits. And a lot of times that's the work that I'm doing, trying to help people move beyond that. And so speak a little bit about that.
Well, the unconscious or subconscious, they're sort of synonyms, is a repository that for everything that we deem essential to self-preservation. So our memories, some are pleasant, some are unpleasant, they're on the hard drive, so to speak, because the unconscious mind really is the hard drive. And all of these concepts that are stored in the unconscious mind, like our memories, like our imagination, like our fears, anger, worries, desires, those would be the programs, the operating programs, the software programs. And of course, when we are not conscious of what's going on, and we do not use our conscience as our guide, then those software programs play automatically, and we are on autopilot. And what happens is the unconscious concepts skew our perceptions. So what happens is we see what we know. Mm-hmm. Our concepts, our unconscious, subconscious concepts skew our perceptions so that we don't really see the world. We see what we think about the world. Mm-hmm. And that gets us into a lot of pain, a lot of pain. However, in certain relationships, aspects of the unconscious or subconscious, in certain relationships, the unconscious comes into our conscious mind, and we are consciously aware of worry and fear. We are consciously aware of judgment and anger. We are consciously aware of desires. Now, the beauty of a relationship is that the unconscious force comes into our conscious mind. Why is that so positive? Because only when that unconscious force moves into our conscious mind and we are consciously aware of it, can we transform that energy. We all know that energy can't be created nor destroyed, but it can be transformed. We learned that in fourth or fifth grade. We can transform water into steam or ice into water. And we can also transform the energy, the contractive, debilitating, poisonous energy of fear, anger, and selfish desires into strategic reserves of healing energy, willpower, and creativity. So when I have a relationship and I am aware consciously of some aspect of my unconscious, if I take that emotion, that thought, and instead of serving it, which will only bring me and every other relationship that I have pain, but if I take it and willingly make an offering of it back to the origin from which it came. And what is the origin from which it came? Well, there's only one origin. Some people call it G-O-D. Some people call it the Supreme Reality. Some people call it Allah. Some people call it the Christ. It doesn't matter what you call it. These are all synonyms. They're all synonyms. Mm-hmm. But in real time, all of a sudden, if I'm aware of anger or greed or fear, my conscience will always tell me if that thought, that desire, that emotion, that concept is to be served in thought, word, or deed, or to be sacrificed so that it can be transformed. And if that thought, that emotion, that desire is in conflict with the superconscious wisdom reflected by the conscience, then it's up to me to sacrifice it, offer it back to the origin from which it came, and miraculously, the contractive, debilitating, poisonous energy of that fear, of that anger, of that selfish desire will be transformed into strategic reserves of healing energy, willpower, and creativity, which will then be stored in the unconscious or subconscious mind, and I can draw on that resource at any time in any relationship. When I need energy, when I need willpower to do what's to be done and not do what's not to be done, and I need a tremendous amount of creativity to deal with all the duties and responsibilities that have come to me in this life.
I love it. Can you give us a practical example of how do you determine whether you're going to use it in thought, word, or deed, or sacrifice it back?
Sure. Well, in order to accomplish that, we have to be free, which for most of us, we are not free. Most of us have reactionary minds. Somebody offers us something, we take it, even if it's poison. And so that's not a very healthy attitude. So we have to take control here. We have to create a space between stimulus and response. We need to slow things down, become detached from whatever appears, and certainly these strong emotions like fear and anger and selfish desire, they're so powerful, it's like they're willing us to do something. In fact, it's so powerful that when somebody cuts me off in traffic, what do I say? I say, I am angry. Now, it's impossible for me to be an emotion, but I'm so captivated by this strength of the emotion, I identify with it as if it were me. I'm angry. I am afraid, you see. I want. But that's not the case, you see. That's not me. I'm aware of the attachment to the fear, the anger, or the desire, but I am not them. And so what that does is it helps to create a space between me and the stimulus that is appearing with which I have a relationship. And if I can create that space of detachment, that provides me with what? What's in that space between stimulus and response? My freedom of action. I can be a free human being. And in that space between stimulus and response, I can redirect my attention to my conscience. And the conscience will tell me if that which is appearing is to be served in mind, action, and speech, or is to be sacrificed into strategic reserves of healing energy, willpower, and creativity.
Excuse me. I love that. I love the idea of how we can become so consumed in our emotions that, excuse me, we believe it's us.
Yes. Yes.
So oftentimes people will say, I'm feeling angry, so it must be true. I'm feeling afraid, so it must be true. I'm sorry, I had a candle lit, and it took my air. But I think the detachment part is key.
Yes, it is. The detachment is the key, because the truth is, every thought is only a suggestion of what to give our attention to. It is not an imperial command. We are free. We do not have to accept, but we have to examine. We have to be detached to determine what the truth is in the moment. And that can always come to us through the conscience. The conscience can always do that if we can quiet the other functions of the mind, which are traditionally so loud and so pushy. I'm referring to the three amigos, the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind. None of these three, ego, senses, or unconscious mind, can make a decision. They are simply advisors. Really, they're lobbyists for their own limited perspective. And as such, they're very loud and they're very noisy and they're very disruptive because they want things their way. Mm-hmm. But as the parent of the mind, if we can love the ego, love the senses, love the unconscious mind, and honor them, embrace them, provide them a platform to air their perspectives, and then train them, parent them to quiet down so that we can give the same respect to the conscience and the super conscious portion of the mind that the conscience has access to, so that we can benefit from that wisdom, from that super conscious wisdom. And that's a process. So in that process, above all else, we have to be kind to ourselves. We have to be loving to ourselves. And that means we should never take on too much too soon. Start with things that are relatively easy, and it'll be right. If it's right, it must be easy. And the more that I can do that, I will provide not only myself a pleasant experience, I will provide the ego and the senses and the unconscious mind pleasant experiences. And through that process, they will trust me as their parent who loves them. And they will also trust more the conscience.
I love it. You talk about two kinds of thoughts. Can you speak a little bit more about what those two kinds of thoughts are?
Certainly. The two kinds of thoughts, fortunately for us, they rhyme, so that helps us to remember them. The Preya and the Shreya. Preya and Shreya. Well, let's try to deconstruct those two. The Preya is some form of ego or sense gratification that conflicts with the superconscious wisdom reflected by our conscience. And initially, it's very pleasant, it's very comfortable, it's familiar and attractive. It provides us a passing pleasure. But in the wake of that passing pleasure comes what? Pain, physical, mental, emotional, even spiritual pain. So what the superconscious wisdom is going to ask of us in a relationship with the Preya is not to serve it, because that will only bring pain, and not to repress it, because that will create neuroses and even more pain. What we are asked to do is to sacrifice it, make it sacred by offering it back to the origin from which it has come, so that the energy, the inherent energy of that fear or anger or selfish desires can be transformed into strategic reserves of healing energy, willpower, and creativity.
I love it. And the other one is Shreya?
Yes, the Shreya is not so pleasant. It's not so comfortable. It's not so familiar. But it will always enable us to fulfill the purpose of our lives without pain.
So then it's okay to think that you can live and experience this journey called life without so much pain and suffering.
That's right. That's right. I believe that pain is the shadow of the outstretched hand of the divine reality tapping us on the shoulder and asking us for our highest and greatest good to make a mid-course correction. It's a way of alerting us. Pain is a way of alerting us that there's some conflict in our lives between outer actions, the way we've been acting or speaking or thinking, and our own superconscious wisdom reflected by the conscience. So that friction, it's a little bit analogous to if you visit New York City and you ride the subways, when the subway train reaches a certain speed and goes around a curve, you can hear the squeal of the friction between the steel wheels and the steel railroad rails. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. That's what pain is. When we're traveling at 100 miles an hour and we're really not conscious, we're on autopilot, and we serve the prayer without thinking about what will come in a day or in a couple of days or in a week or a year, then the pain that we feel to alert us to this situation is an opportunity. It's an opportunity. So we don't want to never be aware of fear. We don't want to never be aware of the anger. We don't want to be never aware of the selfish desire, because at a certain point we see the value of its energy. It becomes a strategic ally rather than an enemy. So when I'm aware of fear and the conscience tells me it's a prayer to be sacrificed, I know that I will benefit if I can simply sacrifice it back to the origin from which it came and transform that debilitating, contractive, poisonous energy of the fear, the anger, or the greed into strategic, positive energy of healing energy, willpower, and creativity.
I love the concept that you can take the negative or the mm-hmm. anger and the hurt and allow it to be transmuted into good energy or positive, like you say, reserve.
I believe that the consciousness of fear, anger, and selfish desires all want to be transformed, to be able to participate in a higher purpose. And do you know why that is? Because the origin of all fear, anger, and selfish desires, the origin is love. Love is the most ancient traveler. It travels from eternity to eternity. But when a human being such as you or I forget who we really are and we identify with the appearance of the body, with the appearance of the thought, with the appearance of the emotion, and we attach ourselves to it, we think it's me, then that love force is immediately transmuted into the desire for an object or a relationship that we think is going to make us happy, that is going to bring us security, that is going to bring us health. And if that desire is blocked, that original love force then gets transmuted into anger when that desire is blocked. But if that desire is fulfilled, then that love force is transmuted into fear that I might lose what I have now that I have it, or that I might not even get what I want. That's why fear, anger, and selfish desires are so powerful. They're not as powerful as the native state of love, which is the most powerful force and guiding principle of the universe. But when we become deluded and separate ourselves from this eternal process, thinking that we are separate from it, then the love changes to desire, anger, and fear.
And there you have it. And there you have it.
Yes.
Please share with my listeners where they can learn more, they can get the book, and they can participate in those meditations.
Great. The book has its own little website. It's called yourconscience.org, yourconscience.org. And as you mentioned earlier, we teach at the American Meditation Institute, which I founded in 1996. And so we would welcome anybody to come every Sunday from 9:30 to 11 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Time. You visit our website at americanmeditation.org, americanmeditation.org, and right on the homepage is a free link every Sunday for our guided meditation and philosophical conversation, just like I've been having with Dr. Erica. And so you're invited. And if you do join us for the free guided meditation and philosophical conversation, the very next day, that following Monday, you'll get a recording of it so you can use it during your week.
Love it. Thank you so much. I just want to say thank you again for coming back for part two. It's always a pleasure to just be in your presence and learn from you. And I just want to say thank you.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Thanks for listening to Master Your Mind with Dr. Erica. We will be back next with another terrific episode that will allow you to master your mind. Please visit hemphappier.com for more information about Dr. Erica and CBD oil. See you next week.